Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Today on the show, we're throwing dice, shooting each other with laser guns, and rewriting Dune history.
Welcome to Gom Jabbar, your guide to the iconic world of Dune. We'll be exploring the themes, philosophies, and characters found in the sandy depths of this vast universe, from Frank Herbert's groundbreaking novels to the adaptations on film and TV. My name is Leo.
And my name's Abu.
And we have a whole other type of episode today. Same two people, same great universe that we're talking about, but this is exciting. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally different kind of episode today. If the length of today's episode and the title didn't clue you off to that, but there's a bit of a backstory here. So yeah. We're going to be later on in the episode in a little bit here. We're going to actually toss to a pre-recorded interview that you and I did with someone on Reddit that I reached out to. So I saw a Reddit post a couple of weeks back by someone who posted about this indie Dune board game that they were developing, and they sort of showed off some screenshots and were asking if people were interested and wanted to play test. And it looked beautiful. The art was beautiful. The presentation was extremely clean, and I was immediately interested. Like, if this was someone who wanted to kickstart this board game, I was game. So I reached out to him, and turns out he was really open to talking about the game with us, and he loved the idea of coming on the podcast and telling us more about his process and his inspiration. So we recorded that interview with him last week. I should probably say his name. His name is Martijn.
Yeah. You know, it was fun to, there's a couple of levels of this that was a lot of fun. Of course, as massive Dune fans, if you're listening to this episode, hopefully you've heard how much we love the universe. To have an opportunity to play a game that is new and exciting and fun to get into, fast to get into, to play a game that's set in the Dune universe is already just a lot of fun. But talking to Martijn and seeing how much he also really loved the universe, and to see, like, I've played a lot of board games and tabletop games in my life, and I've played some great dice games. To see a game that is in development was a lot of fun. And we had a blast talking, and you'll hear that interview, and then afterwards we'll talk a little bit about our impressions of what the game was like and what we thought of it. And we've got a little treat for you at the end. So definitely hang out. Don't stop. Please
keep listening.
Please.
Please. That's like an evergreen plea. Like, please listen to us. Okay, here's the interview. Start by telling us your relationship with Dune. What's your history with the franchise? We take it you're a big fan?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan. When I was like in my teenage years, I read the books, of course, and then I kept reading them. Especially the Frank Herbert books as primary for the Dune world. Yeah, and then, yeah, of course, I watched the miniseries and the movies, and yeah, they weren't that great, and especially if you rewatch them again, then. So I'm really hoping for a good Dune at the end of the year, if that's even remotely possible with the corona pandemic, but who knows?
Yeah.
And also, when you had the Siri voice assistant and also the Google voice assistant, I make them call me God Emperor. So I think that's kind of a measure of how much I like Dune and how much I want to be in that world.
You're aligning yourself pretty heavily with a particular cause, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right away.
Yeah. So, okay. Martin of House Atreides. Gotcha.
Yeah. House Atreides. Martin, you're just on the golden path. That's
yeah.
all.
Oh, yeah.
You're committed to the golden path.
hopefully also with this board game and and thereafter. Who knows?
So I'd actually, let's hear about the game. So Abu and I just played a little bit of it, but I think for people listening, tell us about the game. What's the basic premise? Walk us through it.
Yeah, so the premise of the game is it's a dice game. It's a card dice game. And the idea is, we call it now Battle for Arrakis. I'm not sure if that's going to be the final name. But yeah, that's the title. So you battle for Arrakis. And you do that with dice. So the idea of the dice is they are your troops. And some of the, so we selected 18 regions on the planet Arrakis that you fight for. So all the players choose a faction or randomly pick a faction, and then they fight for Arrakis. And after 30 to 45 minutes, all of Arrakis is taken, either by players or if players can't take the region card, then you flip it over and it gets infested by worms, so you can't take it anymore. But after 30 to 45 minutes, after some battling of conquering regions from other players or from Arrakis itself, then you finish the game, and then the one with the most victory points on the Arrakis or region cards win. And normally with dice games, it's very chaotic. Mm-hmm. It's very random, and I don't always like that mechanic, and that's why we introduced the spice as well. So you can harvest or you can get spice if you take regions, and if you use the spice, you can change the face of the dice to whichever face you like, and that really helps getting rid of the randomness, but still having some randomness as well to have a playful adventure.
So the randomness becomes more strategic. Like if random turns out to totally ruin your life, you can invest this resource spice to turn the tides a little bit.
Yeah, to turn the tides, or you can use spice to activate faction abilities. All the factions or all the houses of households in Dune, they have their own abilities that are suitable for their houses.
Cool. Yeah.
And you have action cards as well. Not too many. You can only get one at the end of each turn. And with that, you can also influence the dice or influence what happens. So, yeah, we try to keep it really small and really simple. And also, not too many rules. You want to set it up within, or you can set it up within a few minutes and you can start playing already.
Yeah. Well, that's actually what I noticed. Before we hopped on this interview with you, you gave me and Leo access to your sort of private test server, and we played through a round of the game. You weren't there with us, but I would say Leo and I picked it up very quickly. Yeah. It took maybe like one or two turns each before we totally understood the flow of the game. And like every player's turn is very clear cut. There's three phases. And eventually, a couple of turns into the game, Leo and I were like, strategizing. We were making like big money plays. We were countering and like cross countering against each other. And we were thinking like long-term strategy, and I liked that it was so simple to pick up. Was that a goal from the very start? Like this should be easy to learn?
Yeah, that was always one of the goals. I really liked that because every Friday we have a board game night at my house.
Oh, cool.
We have some friends there. And sometimes some people are not really into the big board games and some are. And I really wanted to have one that's a little bit strategic, but still fun and also feels small. So you wouldn't deter new players or unseasoned players can also just pick it up. Even people without knowledge of Dune can also pick it up. So we play tested with a few friends and they were self-proclaimed geeks, but they didn't read Dune. So I was a little bit shocked by that. But
yeah, how geeky can you really be?
I mean, yeah, if you haven't read Dune, then yeah, you shouldn't be called a geek, I think. But yeah, they could just play it, and they understood what was happening. Overall, yeah, it plays fine, and that was one of the goals, to just keep it simple, have a short setup time and short rules, and just keep playing.
I would say on the flip side of that, Leo, you and I, as big Dune fans, actually had a lot of fun playing through, like looking through the cards and reading the descriptions, and like I can totally see the game being accessible for someone who doesn't know anything about Dune, because the mechanics are very easy to pick up. But as Dune fans, it was kind of funny to like role play, you know, like you were Shaddam the Fourth, like we each had a leader card. I was Paul, you were Shaddam, and you happen to draw the Kwisatz Haderach card.
Right.
And so in our playthrough, Shaddam the Fourth was the Kwisatz Haderach.
It was a lot of fun. I mean, you mentioned like one of the possible endings of the game is a lot of the territories have been lost to worms, right? And if the players accidentally cripple their own economies, you could end this narrative playthrough with the world, the whole planet being turned over to worms, which is such an interesting, I mean, I had fun, but also Abu and you and I, like, we created this story in the Dune universe using this Dune vocabulary that was fun. I also was going to say personally, quick to pick up. It was a lot of fun just on a gameplay level. But I also had this sort of good balance of I want to see more action cards. I want to see how this plays out. And this desire to learn and experience the narrative of this game. It was fun. It was cool.
Yeah. So, Martijn, I'm wondering, like, if we can back up a little bit, what was your inspiration for the game? Like, what other board games would you say this is pretty equivalent to? Like, if you enjoyed X, you would enjoy Battle for Arrakis.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I think if you like... we play a lot of King of Tokyo. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that board game.
No, but that sounds amazing.
then you play as real big monsters, and you try to take over Tokyo with dice. And it's a really fun game. It's made by I can't remember his first name, but Mr. Garfield, and he also was the creator of Magic: The Gathering.
Wow, yeah, Richard Garfield.
Yeah, some idea how to balance stuff, I think. And yeah, that is a dice game where you. Yeah, Fight for Tokyo, and you have another game called Pico Mino, was the English name, and where you play for rainworms, and that's also with dice, and this is some kind of a combination with that, of those two games, and that was also a little bit the inspiration when we had the idea like 6 months ago. We were playing Pico Mino, that's the rainworm game, and I was thinking, this would be funny if this was in the Dune setting. And then the ball started rolling, and we combined mechanics and added mechanics to it and play tested a lot and iterated, and together with my group of friends whom I play board games with on Friday.
Well, you know, Abu and I, when we played, clearly the game mechanics are there, and it's by the core of it is fun. It's a lot of fun. And then it's got this great Dune kind of vocabulary attached to it. Now, on that topic, regarding the sort of Dune vocabulary and the intellectual property, have you in this development process reached out to the sort of Herbert estate? Is that kind of a concern about like future elements? What is that kind of domain?
Yeah, that's a big worry for us.
That's kind of the giant sandworm in the room.
Yeah, that's really the giant sandworm in the room that's waiting, hovering above me. And yeah, I try to walk without rhythm to survive here in my little house. But yeah, that's a big issue, because it really feels nice with the Dune lore and the IP. You really feel like you're playing a Dune game, and you feel like you're taking part in the universe. And not getting the IP is a possibility. I think it's a big possibility.
Right.
I'm not sure why, because we tried to contact them. We sent them a few emails. We tried looking at people who work there on LinkedIn to find out, okay, who are they, what are their email addresses, and then try not to be too overly forcing or yeah, you want to keep it simple and brief, and but yeah, it's a total silence from their point.
Wow.
So that's a bit of a letdown, because a no is also fine, and then we know what we're we're working with, and
it lets you know what your next steps are if they just give you an answer.
Yeah, that's why we're also looking for gaining some traction with online groups as well, in the hope that we can create some enthusiasm and that the people from the Herbert Estate or from Guildforce 9 see that.
Yeah, and kind of legitimacy.
Have
right?
the ID. Yeah, that's why we're reaching out now a little bit to the outside, because I'm a bit scared of publishing too much artwork, because that's all owned by Dune.
Right, right.
And if this game has been published by me or by our group as a self-publishing, we have to pay royalties or rights or whatever. So I don't really want to do that without permission.
Right.
And it's also impossible without permission as well.
Yeah, that's a great way to get sued.
Yeah, and that's the last thing we want, because we like Dune, and we think this could add to the Dune universe as well.
And again, honestly, to Abu's point and to your point, like, if they told you no, I would still love to play the game that you've built, just with a different vocabulary. It's fun. It's a fun game. But all the better because it's a fun game, and because you've so clearly done your homework in building a fun experience, they have so many reasons to work with you rather than, like, throwing away this opportunity.
Yeah, we're really forcing the yes or no, or we're trying to force it, because then we can continue. Because, we're looking at self-publishing, we're looking at Kickstarter. I've been in contact with some manufacturing companies here in Europe as well, to have it built and made as well. And it's pretty fun. I never did that, and I had no idea what the costs were. And it's pretty fun to go in that world and learn how everything works there as well. So getting custom dice is quite expensive. And also, printing and putting everything in foils and combining everything together in a box, all that kind of stuff. It all adds to the money. And
I hear spice is actually pretty expensive too. if you're going to put real spice in every box, that's going to bring the cost up.
We wanted to have something fun if we ever went the Kickstarter route, to have a tier that you can back. And then we wanted to add cinnamon to the box, so if you open the box, that you would smell some kind of.
Oh, that's nice.
That'd be so fun.
3D printed Chris knife would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Actually, to wrap up, you keep bringing up Kickstarter. The final question that Leo and I wanted to ask you was, what's your timeline look like? You said you have spent 6 months developing and testing the game thus far, and you've started to do outreach and research. What's the timeline look like, and when will people be able to play the game if everything goes right for you?
Yeah, so we're creating playtest sessions online as we speak to have strangers play it, strangers like you guys, and really find out, okay, are the rules clear? Where can we tweak? Where do we need to balance? What action cards do we need to rewrite? So that's a process for, I think, the next 2 months, and after that, For us, we can publish. We can create the artwork in that time as well. For us, it can go really fast. We should be able to deliver all the artwork, if necessary, within 2 months. And within those 2 months as well, doing playtesting and tweaking the mechanics. But I think that's doable for us.
Are there plans for a Kickstarter? Will you launch a Kickstarter when you're ready in 2 to 3 months?
Yeah, so if we have the IP, then we want to probably launch a Kickstarter, but we also want to reach out to publishers as well, because game publishers don't really like it if you go your own course and do your own Kickstarter, because they really like it if you go through them and use their marketing as well and get their marketing materials and people working on it as well. So we're a bit waiting on getting the no or the yes for the IP. I'm more leaning to the negative side that we won't get it, but that's going to be a shame if that's the case. But yeah, I don't expect it to be honest.
Right. Well, Martijn, thank you so much for your time. This was a super enlightening interview. Thank you for giving us a little peek behind the scenes at your development process. I think we're super excited for the game, and we can't wait to see more from you.
Yeah, me too. maybe this is the start of a new venture for us as well. Maybe after this is successful, we can create a game board company, or maybe
there you go,
be game designers.
And then
as well.
Leo and I can take credit for making you famous. We did.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, maybe we can send you one free copy that you have to share.
Hey.
Amazing.
That would be nice.
That would be great.
If nothing else, that was so much fun to have that conversation with him. You know, quality sense of humor, great guy, a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally.
Fingers crossed on that whole IP thing, because it does sound like he's got this big battle ahead of him. You know, his tone of voice as he's saying, I expect not to get it. It's just like,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah. He's totally resigned. I'm a little too hopeful that he'll make it work.
Yeah,
I think he's got a much more realistic approach to it. But we got our hands on the prototype version of the game. He gave us a special link to his test server. And Leo, you and I have actually now played, what, maybe two or three entire playthroughs of the game, maybe two and a half.
Yeah.
And so we've spent quite a bit of time with it. What were your impressions of it?
I'll say I love it. I think it's great. I, as a Dune fan, I was having such a blast, right? Like, not only is it just a fun game, but the distinct feeling of like, you know, there was a time in our last game where you were a Spacing Guild ambassador and you played the Kwisatz Haderach card.
Right.
And that is just so funny to me.
Yeah.
Just imagining if yours and my game was a chapter in Dune, just imagining character reactions.
Sort of role-playing it.
Yeah, exactly. Role-playing it.
Yeah. And as Dune fans, I think part of the joy, especially the first couple of times we played, was whenever we picked up one of those action cards, you'd pick it up, turn it around, look at it, and you'd see Stoneburner. If you're a Dune fan, before you even read the description of the card to learn what it does, you kind of already know.
Yeah. And maybe you even have some like emotional reactions to this action card.
Yeah. I really hope Martijn is able to work out that Dune IP or find enough backing and resources to be able to pay whatever licensing fees he has to make it work. I wish him all the best with that, because this is a game I truly would want to buy and play with friends, whether they were Dune fans or not, which, you know, you and I are on a epic mission to make everyone a Dune fan by the end of 2021.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we've accomplished our mission, everyone will want to play this board game with us, and hopefully we'll see it available. Martijn will be able to figure out the IP issues and launch a Kickstarter or get enough backing. It's truly a treat. And something to keep in mind is you and I are right now just playing an early prototype.
Right,
Martijn
right,
said in
right,
the interview,
right.
It took him 6 months to get the game to this prototype stage. And while it feels like a finished game, it's still far from truly balanced. All of the action cards, all of the like faction abilities aren't finalized. They could still change. The art, of course, is still something that Martijn said he was working on and developing. So we just played a prototype, and the fact that a prototype this early in the process felt so fun and felt so complete is a testament to his abilities to really put that together, and a testament to how much work he's put into it. So I'm glad we got a chance to reach out to him and to talk to him for this episode today, and I'm glad he was open enough to give us access to the game.
I feel like we've talked a lot about during the interview, we talked a lot about it, and now we're talking a lot about kind of our impressions of the game. But I think it's time to tell people the good news?
This has got to be really aggravating to our list.
I know, right? Like,
hey, we played this really cool thing without you.
It was so fun.
It was so much fun. Just believe us.
Just imagine as much fun as you've ever had. And it was more than that.
Yeah. Well, luckily, our listeners don't have to imagine.
It's true. It's true. This is, it feels good. It feels good. We were talking to Martijn about it, and we played the game on Tabletopia. And Martijn agreed that it would be awesome, it would be a lot of fun to get more eyes on the game and to get more impressions out there. So we have a link that we're going to be sharing in the show notes that for a limited time, if you, dear listener, want to try your hand at capturing the beautiful sandy terrain of Dune, you have the option of playing this beta on Tabletopia for a limited time. Again, if you're hearing these words the day that this episode came out, you've got T-minus 30 days from now. So go.
Right. Get your hands on it. And in addition to the link, the special link that Martijn gave us to the Tabletopia server where he's testing the game, we'll also be linking his website where he has contact information, where you can reach out to him to learn more. And I'm sure he'll be posting updates about his development there. Send him your feedback. Once you've played the game, let him know, like, this is what we thought of it. Here's what we think could be improved. Like, Martijn told us that he wants to get this feedback from people. He wants to hear, as big a group of people as possible voicing their concerns or their excitement for the game so that he can continue to fine-tune and develop it as he gets closer and closer to a potential Kickstarter or closer and closer to release. So check out those links in the show notes. Those are exclusive for our listeners. So thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you so much for being a part of the Gom Jabbar podcast journey. And this is our little treat to you, courtesy of Martijn. So check out that link. Please test out the game and let Martijn know what you think.
And with that invitation, that open, encouraging invitation, that's where we're going to wrap up this episode. We will, with our next episode, be returning to our standard lovable format of exploring way too deeply some minuscule part of the Dune universe, but
really overthinking everything.
way overthinking, but also having a blast doing it. Thank you for joining us today, and look forward to, we've got some really awesome episodes in the works that I personally can't wait to share with you.
Well, friends, there is no real ending. It's just the place where you stop the recording. But this podcast is always one step beyond logic, so help spread the word of Muad'Dib and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to check out the other shows on the Lore Party Podcast Network on loreparty.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at lore_party. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, he who controls the podcast controls the universe. We'll see you on the Golden Path.